Alright, I've basically been thinking of doing this, but here's the bonus that you probably forgot to hear this past week. I probably share my opinion on something that's a little close to me. I mean, I like technology, but also I'm probably obsessed with media. I'm probably obsessed with television and stuff. Obviously, the media industry, sort of. And I probably read industry publications and stuff. And so, a lot of development, so I have my views to share. So, do listen to this. Obviously, A, our regular scheduled programming will probably resume later on, so do watch this space or just stick around. There's obviously another episode. All right, just let's just get right into it. So over the weekend or sort of or around as the weekend or sort of, this interesting streaming service Quibi was announced that they were shutting down on December 1st or around December 1st, and it was quite interesting. It was quite fascinating. That now most of you may not really, if you, I mean, if you live in the US and you've seen the ads on TV or obviously the billboards around, or you've been at home probably, so you might have not seen the billboards, or you must have seen the ads all over. As Quibi is this pretty interesting short form video streaming service. The interesting thing was designed for mobile, and it was founded by the same person who launched DreamWorks long time back. It sort of dominated the CG, the animated movie industry, sort of in Hollywood. DreamWorks, pretty much the man behind DreamWorks, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and then former eBay and HP CEO Meg Whitman. And the idea sort of was this, and it was Jeffrey's idea, that people probably have a lot of free time, probably when they're out and about, and they have they're always on their phones, and they're probably willing to watch short form entertainment, premium quality, high production standards, and good storytelling, top talent, you name it. And there is quite a lot of money, and it was quite lofty, and it didn't work. I mean, it launched in April 2020, right when the pandemic really hit the whole wide world. And surprisingly, and the thing was, and also the service of this kind, like Quibi, didn't really have the kind of shows to target consumers and really win them over. To say the least, doesn't really have the kind of shows. Really, it didn't have the kind of. It probably had, for me. If you talk about me though, probably the kind of one who's watched stuff off Netflix and Amazon stuff. But there were a few shows that appealed to me on Quibi. There was a reality, unscripted sort of series, Chrissy's Court. Obviously, starring Chrissy Teigen, probably famous model, and she basically is in this Judge Judy kind of situation. It was kind of cool. But and then there was another sort of series, another piece of programming that was a powerful drama that almost won, that won an Emmy pretty much. Hashtag Free Ray Sean. If you probably remember it, you probably use Quibi to an extent. But the thing was that it had tons of programming, and obviously from top talent, remakes of Punk'd and stuff, but it didn't really take off. It kind of failed. I mean, it just and it's quite interesting that it's been a failure. I mean, let's just go through the numbers, mind you. I mean, the numbers should tell a lot. So Quibi, this interesting mobile first video short form video streaming service, pretty much in quick numbers, it was founded in 2018 with obviously the idea to offer this kind of cool mobile video service. It raised roughly around $2 billion. That's what I've kind of heard. It raised well over more than $1 billion from all the major Hollywood studios and production companies and investors. It at launch, when it launched in its first week, it was downloaded 1.7 million times, with roughly apparently 1.3 million active users. In terms of programming with numbers, Quibi was really ambitious on this. It spent $1 billion on programming for its first year, with roughly 8,500 short form episodes. And a short form episode is a single piece of content. It's a part of a movie or a show, and it's in roughly 10 minutes or less. And there are roughly 8,500 of those, and it pretty much includes 175 shows in total. So lots of content, including daily news shows and much more. And overall, And it also, I mean, and the service was ad support to an extent, with a ad free tier and an ad supported tier for obviously $5, starting from $5, and obviously an ad free tier for $8. And in terms of ads, it earned $150 million to run ads for the first year. So that was just a bunch of numbers, and this was with a lot of ambition, and but then it kind of fell apart. I mean, the whole idea failed, and it was simply due to one reason. And that one, I don't have to explain this to you. It's affected every other business on planet Earth. Every industry has suffered it. The coronavirus pandemic, COVID-19. This is one reason why Quibi failed and fell apart. A global pandemic, but more so, it's weird, isn't it? How did the pandemic destroy a video streaming service, especially at the time when it was actually boom time for video streaming? Because let's face it, when it's a pandemic, people have to stay at home to avoid getting infected, and when you're at home, you've already studied, you already did your office jobs, commute time was gone, other sort of mundane time that you had in which Quibi could have exploited was gone, and so you're at home, and you just streamed more video than ever, more shows, you watched more shows and movies in the same time. It was weird. Quibi didn't get the kind of traction or user base, the kind of popularity at a time when Netflix and Disney Plus, I mean, two competitive, highly competitive services, recording massive viewership figures. I mean, we're talking tens of millions of homes tuning in to watch, to stream stuff, and also traditional TV getting higher viewer ratings compared to any other time of the year, any in the past couple of years comparatively. And so Quibi kind of, then Quibi still failed. What happened? What was the deal breaker? You see, it all kind of boiled down to Quibi's strategy. You see, they had an idea that if you using the Quibi app, you're using it on the phone, and also you're out and about, you're waiting in line to get your coffee or buy clothes, or I don't know, or you're on your way to somewhere or commute, and you have that free time to use your phone. You use Quibi to watch news and dramas and movies and ideas, and also it all is in quick bites. But here's the problem. Everyone stayed at home, and obviously you'd use your phone, but you were mostly on Instagram and other apps. And also, if you wanted to watch mobile-only short-form video, lots of services existed. Yes, there was the pandemic, but also there was competition. I think what you could say is Quibi kind of forgot to realize that if this product entered 2 years ago, it would have worked to an extent, but it entered 2020, and this was a time when short-form video itself is such a hot market. I don't have to tell you that. There are a lot of options. Snapchat is good at short-form video, vertical short-form video. Then there's YouTube, which is free, and TikTok, and Instagram. Visit Instagram Stories and IGTV, and you have those options, and best of all, those options are free. So short form video, you have your choices, and people know what you get on them, and it's free, ad supported. And then you had paid streaming services. You're bored at home already, you're not going to go out anyways, you're going to watch Disney Plus and Netflix, and those services grew in use and became massive, beyond relief really. And so more people use those services instead of simply mobile only services, and that was also a big shortcoming sort of Quibi, was that it was really mobile only, and it was kind of limited to sort of mobile video programming. It didn't really look further, obviously, to offer actual entire movies or shows. I mean, only in the last month or so they added apps for streaming boxes like Apple TV, so they kind of looked over that. And apparently another disadvantage kind of that came over, apparently you couldn't screenshot anything you were watching on the Quibi app on iOS or Android. If you tried to, it'd block it off and would not do it. It would not make it happen. And so that kind of reduced sort of the sharing of, it's weird, right? It's kind of weird that a product like Quibi had to rely on a whole lot of advertising to get people to know their service. It didn't really look to natural word of mouth or reviews on social media. if people want knew, I mean, not many people knew a show on Quibi, because really, you couldn't really screenshot a clip from it and tell people, oh, it's such a great show, you must watch it, hashtag favorite, hashtag weekend, you know. So if you, and only later on, it added a screenshotting feature. How do I describe it? It added that feature, and it was a little too late. Those additions, there were big downsides at the beginning, but by the time they added it, it was too little too late. And obviously, there was obviously the content. It wasn't, I mean, it really wasn't the kind of premium programming you'd, if you were paying for a service. I mean, just you could get it for free elsewhere, so that was one. But also, primarily, it was, there's also the Quibi, the service was also a paid service. You had to pay to watch stuff on with ads, and it didn't really work. I mean, if you're consuming stuff on mobile, you want it for free, right? Even if it comes with ads. So that was one. And then also those were really like the kind of the gripes, I mean, from the looks of it. And so you had a streaming service that obviously had those, didn't have those really features from day one, and didn't have compelling programming, and it had way too much money, sort of like probably hundreds of millions of I mean, we're talking billions. It can make all the kind of programming it wanted, but it couldn't really beat the bigger streaming services with the kind of might and prestige and the spending power and quality power that those attained. When the app launched, everyone kind of downloaded it and used it, and then when the trial period was over, which was 90 days after, then it dropped really hard, gone from a couple of million, and now at the time, almost time when it's going to shut down, it'll roughly be 500, half a million subscribers. So the service didn't really meet expectations, anyone's expectations really, it didn't change the entertainment world as it planned to. It's a big, big flop. That's kind of sad. I mean, probably sad for the, especially with given the investment that was gone into, and obviously the people who worked on it, and obviously the shows that have come on it and stuff. I mean, it didn't really have any big hits. It didn't expand quickly. And also, I would add this, being someone who lives obviously abroad, it didn't expand to other regions, so they had plenty of technological limitations. And then there was the other background sort of backdoor problems, like a lawsuit with a patent infringement lawsuit on its turnstile technology. Basically, the video, you could watch the content in vertical and landscape mode. It violated a patent. That stuff costs money, and it burns through company expenses. And obviously, they did have a lot of money, but the business was not so viable. They probably would burn way too much cash, and if they asked for more, then obviously it wouldn't really work. And so all that, plus a market where people obviously preferred bigger premium services, obviously where you had more quality shows, you look at the circumstances and probably you now realize why a product that just really never worked in the first place. So that's that, really. What about the shows on it? They made so much programming. Now, this is the interesting thing. Now, Quibi is going to shut down in December. The programming, the way they arranged it, was such that they gave creators a bit of a leeway. They could make programming for Quibi, but they could, Quibi had the rights to those shows for a couple of years, sort of, after the release, sort of. For a couple of years, really, exclusively. And then afterwards, the producers can go out and sell off the shows to any other place that they want to pack. They can reap, I mean, the movies that came on it, so that were like 12 episode shows, they could put it back together as a movie and then give it to, say, Netflix or Disney or whoever they deem fit. And that kind of means that if there is any program that already was made and was due to be released, it'll just go off the service and it'll just be released elsewhere. And as the streaming wars intensifies, you'll probably see more of that happening. There are streaming services that kind of came and went, or shows that didn't really work, but their producers still found the show that it had a fan base, and either they just sold off the whole show, so the reruns sort of pretty much the rights to also stream it again on another service. The best example is Cobra Kai. That show was made for YouTube Premium, for YouTube's paid tier, but that kind of got cancelled But then the whole show itself was then sold off to Netflix, and now it's become probably a most watched Netflix show. So if there was a lot of content made, but it won't go in waste. It won't go in earnest. It won't go in waste. So that's kind of lovely. And overall, even if they lost billions, they still have $350 million left in cash, so they can give back to investors. So that's a little bit of money left in the bank. But it just went horribly wrong. It just tripped out completely. It was quite an interesting time. But also, it kind of reminds me of a pretty deep element. I mean, this is about streaming, and it's more about technology and obviously media, but the streaming wars is quite aggressive, and it's so much competition, and it's a different time, and so there'll be a lot of winners and losers, and probably in the next 5 years, pretty much, we'll obviously see more streaming services come, but also there'll be few losers, there'll be lots of losers to come. But then, I kind of would stop here, and I'll probably finish off this topic, really, by kind of reminding, obviously, that Netflix is CEO, kind of, the kingpin, really, of streaming, Reed Hastings. He kind of made a good point, really. Well, yes, the streaming wars is aggressive, but really, streaming is such a unique medium that there'll really be room for so many streaming services. But the thing, interesting part is that they'll cater for certain audiences. That's the difference. The real war is a service that everyone uses. This is the real streaming war, sort of. It's to get everyone to use that service. Niche or smaller services will find their circles of viewers all over the world, really. But I mean, the real war is like trying to knock off Netflix or Amazon Prime Video, and Quibi won't be the last in this streaming war. So it quickly came and quickly went off. So quite a quick history. I mean, we'll look back at it and probably be one of those, lessons that you'd learn. I mean, one lesson I'd say is billions of dollars is never enough. You gotta have a good strategy and a good business plan. You gotta have a good feeling that if you have content, everyone will watch it and it'll be hit. I mean, this is a good case study. I mean, do go back and look at it again a few years down the road, after everything has happened, really, after the market's kind of transformed. So that was interesting, really. So yeah, and this second one was not really that interesting, but I thought I'd add it in, obviously, to top it off. Apparently, industry rumors are all saying Hollywood industry rumors, rumors are flying in Hollywood that James Bond's latest blockbuster, No Time to Die, Daniel Craig's last Bond movie as Bond, that was delayed a bajillion times due to COVID, again also, a similar reason, has been delayed over and over again, and the latest has been it's going to release in April 2021. Apparently MGM is looking to sell the movie as it is to a streaming service. Possibly Apple and Netflix are circling to buy the movie. And apparently the asking price, I mean, this is all rumor and speculation at the moment, but the asking price is probably as high as $600 million. So more than double the price of the movie. So if MGM actually ends up selling it and they get tired and they realize cinemas are not going to open back anytime soon or quickly, or they don't come back up online quickly enough for blockbusters to start releasing, or really vaccine doesn't really come out quickly enough, then they'll probably have to, I mean, they'll have to sell it. And if they do, it'll be for a good profit, because it's James Bond, mind you. It's quite an iconic franchise. The sound, I mean, No Time to Die going straight to streaming, it's gonna be shaking the industry, not steering the industry. It's completely shaking the overall, sort of the movie world. Shaking it, not staring it. If you get that reference, obviously, you're probably a big fan of it. Shaking, not staring. Obviously, it's quite interesting. I mean, probably shaking the whole industry up completely, and causing quite a fuss, quite literally. But also, but the thing is, I mean, MGM have kind of denied it. They've commented that they're not looking to sell the movie straight to the streaming service. But it's kind of an obvious industry trend that's happening, because cinemas have been shut due to COVID-19 restrictions all over the world, and obviously lockdowns have come and gone, sort of, as cases have risen and fallen in some places. But cinemas have all been shut because it's still unsafe, really. It's still not so safe to go to an indoor venue and be there for 2-3 hours, even with masks and stuff, and feel safe and watch a movie. I mean, if you want to watch a movie in the cinema, you got to feel comfortable. That's the thing, really. And so, I mean, it's probably, I mean, you're picking between two hard rocks, really. But the thing is that there are two obvious outcomes coming out of cinemas being shut. And and obviously, studios will have to make sure that if they have titles, they have their slates, that they make money off them. But there are two strategies that have kind of come out, obviously. And obviously what's happening now is no different to what's been happening in industry, really. I mean, Disney and Universal Pictures have done digital releases. Basically, they completely released the movie straight to digital video, so that obviously the movie is available on iTunes and Google Play, and you can get it for $20. So for one to watch it once or twice, and then Disney recently done this with Mulan for Disney Plus. So you have to have Disney Plus, and you pay $30 to watch Mulan. I haven't heard great things about it, but heard it was a good remake. Aladdin was better. Oh well. But primarily, if you look at it, that was one approach. And then another approach was to completely take the whole movie and then just give it away to a streaming service and they'll release it. A lot of recent titles have been the subject of direct acquisitions, like Borat 2, the sequel to Borat, that got released on Prime Video. And then Enola Holmes got released on Netflix, and this was due to a similar arrangement like this. And obviously, there are many more deals in the wings that we're probably going to see. But those movies obviously are of smaller significance. Oh, and I forgot, Tom Hanks's... I'll add to bring this one up because this is relevant to one of the parties in question here. Greyhound, it was this World War II thriller starring Tom Hanks. Sony was making it, and they were going to release it, obviously, and then cinemas got shut due to COVID-19. And then Apple bought the rights to the whole movie, and now they have it as an Apple movie. So, great. Cool. So, could No Time to Die be next? I'm sure MGM wants to make money on the movie really, really well, and it'll probably be a hot release. But, obviously, they do release it in April 2021, but then it'd be great. But the problem is, will cinemas be back up to that level where people will just go back to the movies? There's that uncertainty that dooms. There's also the vaccine and safety precautions that are there. But when is the vaccine coming, really? That's also a question that is on everyone's heads. But also, it'd probably make a whole lot of sense for MGM that they obviously just take the movie straight to streaming. It'd probably give them it'd probably bring the movie, obviously, to more people than normal. I'm sure they probably are thinking long and hard about it. But who can end up streaming No Time to Die? I'll probably say this straight away. People think it's Netflix because they've probably been buying a lot of titles and they're used to this. This is usual business. This is no big deal. And they probably have a lot of archived titles in their library. But most likely, I'll probably easily say this, Apple could end up taking No Time to Die to streaming for Apple TV Plus. They've done this for Greyhound, and they've done it for other movies and shows. They've obviously acquired it from other players, and Apple's starting to do this. The thing with Apple is that their strategy has been a bit more like that they're streaming, they're making their own shows and movies, and they're streaming it straight. But now, obviously to compete with bigger services like Netflix and Prime Video, you've got to start buying shows from other players who probably aren't shopping in the market for a buyer, and Apple's probably a good taker of these shows. No Time to Die would probably be a solid addition to Apple TV Plus. Now, why do you think that is? I mean, first of all, Apple TV Plus probably is logically a good home for a Bond movie, for James Bond, because, I mean, visually and audio-wise, Apple TV Plus can support 4K HDR. It can do Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. And so people who probably have solid home cinema setups can watch the movie as it is, as it's meant to be, as the director is meant to see it. And so that's kind of interesting because you can, you know, you could see it the way the director is meant to show it, meant to, you know, make it, you know. So if you know what I'm talking about, the cinematic quality is maintained with something like Apple TV Plus. So that's not a problem to start with. And another was sort of the Bond theme song, you know, the famous, I'm not going to play it here for copyright reasons, that played when the iPhone 12 was released in the iPhone, unveiled in the iPhone 12 event recently. And that means that they probably have already got a deal to get streaming rights for Bond movies, including the latest No Time to Die, really. And they could do it. This could be a big franchise that Apple TV Plus could exclusively have. I probably have only one big major franchise that they've gotten, that is Peanuts, the famous comic, the little Snoopy character. They've recently got exclusive streaming rights to all of its holiday specials, including upcoming ones and the past ones. Yes, so that Christmas special that you seen a few years ago, they're all dancing in the hall. You could see it only on Apple TV Plus, so cool. But it's kind of tricky because, I mean, will they let this through? I mean, this could be a significant move if No Time to Die ends up going to Apple TV Plus. Like, I'm gonna, no pun intended here, but shake up the industry completely. And it also could be a big sign that cinemas are probably going to go the way of the dodo unless something is done, or a vaccine comes out, or obviously interest comes back in the overall industry. And also, I kind of want to forget to add this, but home cinema viewing, or sort of in-home viewing of movies, it's gotten a whole lot better with technology. Yeah, 4K TVs have become prevalent, HDR technology has brought in the visual fidelity that's there, and I mean, a whole lot of better technology, and Dolby Atmos, which was kind of a good excuse to make big screen cinemas, that's come for the home now. You can buy $1,000 soundbars that, and $600, $700 soundbars that do Atmos out of the gate. So, I mean, it's kind of logical that movies are probably gonna, cinemas are gonna be going the way of the dodo, unless something is done. So, but if Apple TV, if Apple ends up buying out the No Time to Die, that'll be shaking things up big time. It'd be a faithfully good home for the franchise because it's sophisticated. A lot of Apple's customers are high-end consumers and obviously have a lot of good tastes. But also the trickier part will probably be the brand endorsements that have been in the movie, especially from Apple's rivals like Nokia Mobile. Poor Nokia, if they end up realizing that, then they'll have to do something about digitally editing out the 8.35G out of the movie. So, we'll wait and see, really. This is all about speculation at the moment. I mean, I feel like Apple could buy it because they have the money and they really want a big franchise to be part of their service. They don't really have any big hits yet. I mean, they're starting to get the kind of shows that people are talking about, but no big, earth-shattering, iconic, pop culture institutional hit like, you know, Orange is the New Black or The Crown or Stranger Things on Netflix, or I don't know, Disney Plus is The Mandalorian, and then HBO Max has got obviously HBO shows and stuff, but you know, Apple TV Plus doesn't have the monumental hit it has on its hands. So if it can get any good IPs or obviously really good, pretty classy shows or movies, then that could strengthen its library. I think it would be lovely if they do sign a deal with obviously the current sort of with MGM and sort of the producers behind the Bond movies. It'd be lovely if they made a sophisticated spy thriller series. It'd be a 007 franchise kind of going into broadening the story, sort of. I mean, who knows? 007 could probably be Apple's sort of Marvel MCU. You never know, really. That could be interesting. So that could be interesting. You never know, really. That could happen. I mean, that'd be lovely. I also did hear also equally that Apple could buy out Sony Pictures or MGM, and then people are like, Stargate should just come back if they bought MGM, which I think would be interesting, because really, if you look at the streaming services that are coming from Hollywood studios, also one element that they're utilizing on, exploiting, is IPs that they've had, those big, franchise, world of franchises that they have, those sort of house of brands that they have, and that could be a good leverage really. Apple doesn't really have that. I mean, Apple's pretty good at making iPhones, but doesn't hasn't made any hit shows or movies. So that's interesting to look. That's interesting to see. I mean, if this happens, I mean, tomorrow never dies, that's for sure. So yeah, no pun intended. So yeah, that's what I have to say really. I mean, thanks for listening, and have a great day really. I mean, if you liked it, obviously do subscribe to this podcast. Our regular scheduled programming will probably resume soon. Till then, talk to you later. Peace. I mean, you know what to do.